some of my songs I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind, and sometimes it makes me feel mellow.
Makes him feel mellow.
Welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Today is Tuesday, August 3rd, 2010. This past weekend, Beer Sessions Radio was up in Cooperstown, New York for Brewery Omegang's Belgium Comes to Cooperstown Beer Festival, our very first road show. We had the honor of sitting down with some great guests, including nano brewers from Lawson's Finest Liquids and Stillwater Artisanal Ales, and of course, our friends from Omegang. These shows will air here on the Heritage Radio Network on August 24th and 31st, so don't miss them. I'm joined by my co-host, Ray Dieter. We were up in Omegang. How you doing, Ray? Did you get to camp out at Omegang on Saturday night?
I did. I got there early Saturday morning and pitched a tent and just hung out with the natives, and it was amazing. I haven't camped in I don't know how many years. I don't even want to talk about how many years. A long time, but it was a great time, great food. You know, once you get there, you don't spend a penny, and you don't even have to participate in the actual festival itself. I mean, Omegang has great beer, and so many great breweries from the area brought in their Belgian specialties and great things, and it's all there for you. But the campsites, all these guys and people and girls bring the best beer they have in their collections. I tasted so many quality aged beers. There's
homebrewers.
Homebrewers, and also like people that just, you know, were cellaring beers, like, you know, just, you know, overproofed beers that were saved in their cellars. I mean, I don't even remember the things. I should just start writing things down. Also, a lot of good beer bars from New York City, like the Pony Bar and Swift, they actually had campsites set up with draft beer. And so you could just pour yourself a beer back in the campsites.
It was a great weekend. Our first show on the road, which was pretty cool. We got over the logistics, and we met a lot of great people. I mean, there's some the nano brewers and micro brewers. There's some really good stuff going on out there, and we're happy about that. In honor of Cooperstown, because it was the hop capital of America until the early 1900s, we're going to do a show tonight called The Hop Show, and we have a couple special guests. We have Carmen DeVito and Alice Marcus Craig. They're also co-hosts on Heritage Radio Network for the We Dig Plant Show. Hi, Carmen. Hi, Alice. How are you?
Hello.
All right.
It's great to be a guest.
Yeah, it's nice not to have to host our own show.
Well, you guys are like seasoned performers. You can even speak and together, and it's like the twins from the
in
40s.
Stereo.
Yeah.
Well, we usually don't drink alcohol on our show, so it's really nice to
loosen up a little bit.
What kind of show do you have?
Well, it's about plants and horticulture.
And you don't drink when you... No.
We have sharp tools and, you know.
Oh, I see.
Well, we have another guest too, Ben Granger from Beercraft, you're gonna hear his voice in a few minutes. But Ben, just holler out, what's the beer that we're starting with?
This is a Kelso IPA.
Kelso IPA.
Yeah.
So it's the hop show. So it's also really kind of an IPA show. So Ben brought in quite a few IPAs, and we'll talk about those. So I know that Alice and Carmen have prepared statements because they're used to doing a well-researched show. And tell us about hops. I don't really know anything about them.
We're just telling the world that we're nerds.
Are you saying that we aren't well-rehearsed and well...
Our show has been described as candid, and we don't usually have any notes. And these guys are you know, well-researched.
It's all up here.
Historical. So history of hops. What are hops? I mean, that's a dumb question, but really, I mean, people didn't always make beer from hops.
Yeah.
And, you know, what are hops?
Hops is a flower, and it's harvested at a very specific time, and that's what really gives you the taste. If it's early or later, that's where you get the taste variations.
And the flower is on a vine. It's a very aggressive vine. Mm-hmm. That grows, it could grow 15 or 20 feet a year.
And it needs support. Mm-hmm. And it's very historic. It's one of America's great cash crops. And that's what, you know, we thought we would have fun talking about today. And especially Cooperstown, New York, was the hops capital of
what
New
happened?
York State.
How come it lost that designation in the early 1900s?
Well, hops is actually subject to downy mildew, mm-hmm. Which makes growing it in the East a little difficult. And I think the market really picked up and the conditions were better on the West Coast.
Right.
So
it wasn't like, I know there's a grape blight in New York State in the turn of the century as well, that kind of knocked the entire wine industry out until mm-hmm. they had to figure out a whole new grape variety that would mm-hmm. live in New York. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't a blight. It was just the market changed. It was more efficient to grow it.
Land was cheaper.
Yeah. As people expanded westward, and actually the West Coast, especially the Northwest, is a great horticultural region. I mean, a lot of wonderful sure. plants come from there. You know, we have a lot of land in New York State too, and a lot of tradition of growing great ornamental plants. But land was cheaper there, and people spread out there, and it became the climate was better for growing things. There's just more rain and more regular temperatures, not as harsh a winter.
Sure.
So it just became more economically viable to grow it there.
Can I just make a statement? I want to apologize to everybody that asked me why hops weren't grown in New York State, because I've told everybody there was a hop blight. I just pulled that out of my ass.
Well, it kills my plan. My plan was to revitalize the whole upstate by having everyone grow hops.
Well,
and then our local brewers could make.
I think they should. And I mean, the history is here. The land is here. So, you know, let's do it.
Carmen, let's get Ben on, because he's dying to say something. Ben's a famous guy who tends his own hops.
Yeah, I have 15 varieties, but there are people that are making these movements to grow hops in New York. There's a guy in Cornell. Cornell has got, at their agricultural part of the university, that they have gone through great lengths to be growing hops in New York. In fact, Ithaca used to do, I don't know if they do it for bottles anymore, but their double IPA was done entirely with New York State grown hops.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all sorts of people that are looking to grow hops in New York. There's lots of, you know, of interest, even all across Brooklyn. There's all sorts of people growing hops now.
Yeah, it is. And we use it, Carmen and I use it a lot ornamentally, because it gives great quick coverage over pergolas. And, you know, if you've got a hot rooftop and you're, you know, svetzing out there, you need it.
How do we grow hops? You know, what do we start with, and how long does it take before we get a cash crop?
Well,
I want to grow hops.
Yeah. Well, Ben could probably answer that better. I mean, to get it started, you know, the ornamental varieties are actually readily available at most common nurseries. And you can usually get, you know, probably like a 2 or 3 foot tall plant, and you just, it's pretty forgiving plant in terms of conditions. You know, it can take heat, it can take, you know, lots of rain, you know, not so much rain. It's pretty, you know, tolerant. But maybe, Ben, you can answer better about how to get them to grow to fruit.
Well, hops are actually really easy to grow. You mm-hmm. know, you early on in the season, you've got to get your hands on some rhizomes. So before,
on some what?
Rhizomes, basically a root cutting.
Uh-huh.
That's got a little nodule on it of like the early beginnings of life in that root, and you want to pre-order, and you want to get your root or your rhizome sent to you in like, you know, April, even March. It can even be even better. And the first, you know, here in New York, it's easier because we don't have a lot of snow cover that stays late. So once there's, you know, the danger of frost, that last frost is gone, you go out, you break earth, you drop in your rhizome about 6 to 8 inches down, piece of cake. You know, what I like to do is I just take, you know, some composted garden manure mm-hmm. and some peat and get it nice and wet, make a nice little, like, dig a hole, make the mixture nice, drop it in, drop the rhizome in so it's nice and coated, cover it up, and then let it go. And just like they said, It's aggressive.
It's really, really, like, if you're scared about learning how to plant anything, start with hops.
Yeah, it's
because you'll be a genius.
Yeah, it does wonders for your growing ego, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And even in, like, this time of year when it's New York and it's 110% humidity and, like, 95 degrees, you can literally go into the yard and hang out and watch the hops grow. They'll push out 6 to 8 inches in a day.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got plants that... last year I had a plant that was 32 feet tall, and it was just insane. It just kept going and going and going and going and going. And last year wasn't even a good year for hop growing.
Yeah.
This year has been much, much better. Last year we had a cold, wet spring. It sent the hops to flower early. But this year it's been hot, moist, but at least solid and not too cold, because that cold weather is what sends them right into flower right away. And then you stress them like that. And they flower too early, you don't get a full crop. But this year, I'm hoping for the nice warmth into the end of the season, and then we'll get that cold weather, and then we'll have like some very, very, very nice.
And then what do you do? When do you harvest them?
Well, as you guys were saying, you know, there's a point where the harvest is going to be August, September, generally in this area. But there is a point in which those hops, every day, just like when I make beer, I taste it every day. When they start to flower, I take a flower and I smell it. And there's a day, it's amazing, there's a day where you squish the flower in your hands and you smell your hands, and it goes from smelling like plants to smelling like its character, depending on what strain it is. So, you know, one day it's going to go from smelling like just crushed up grass to passion fruit or fruit punch or like Hawaiian punch.
I got
punch.
A question.
It looks very papery when it's ready. That's the visual.
When you say flower, you actually mean flower, or do you mean the cones?
The cones.
The cones are flowers.
They are flowers. They are. Okay. Yeah. I think folks should know that. They don't really flower like a rose. They have these little, like, look like pine cones, but they're tiny and green.
And they hang in clusters.
And they smell incredibly aromatic.
Like when they're really, like when they're old, they look like grapes.
Yeah.
Like they hang in, hang in bunches. Like they're like, and they're just, they're really,
you got to see Ben right now. His eyes are wide open. He's like so passionate about his hops.
I wanted to say that, but I didn't want to.
It's actually called a bine.
The bunch.
It's a bine.
B-I-N-E?
B-I-N-E.
Instead of a V-I-N-E?
Right, because it climbs clockwise versus a vine that's counterclockwise.
Wow, that's something I never heard
and
before.
You can try like heck to get them to climb the other way. They won't.
Mm-mm.
Oh, really? No, they go the way they go.
Yeah, they
got
do. They
tough
do,
nature.
They do what they want.
Yeah.
It's pretty rad. Hey, they're like
Ben,
a cool plant.
How many different varieties of hops are there?
Just in general?
Well, no. How about the varieties that are used in brewing?
Nowadays, they're all used. As you guys know, I mean, brewers are always constantly looking for that new hop flavor. So they're all used. I would say there's 1,000 varieties anyway.
A thousand varieties anyway. Are they like hybrids, or is it like or naturally occurring?
Well, the thing is like, you know, hops, we associate hops with, you know, Bavaria, Belgium, all these, you know, England, all these like small hop growing regions,
England,
where there's really like traditional strains, you know, Hallertau's or Sots or, you know,
Kent.
Northern Brewers, Kent's, EKG's, Kent Goldley, things, you know, like that. And then when, you know, those hops being brought to America and used in like the macro brews and large brewing companies, it's kind of inefficient because hops have a chemical or property about them called, you know, an alpha acid, and that's what makes beer
alpha
bitter.
Acid?
Yeah, that's the compound that makes it bitter. And it really, there's a lot of science involved in how that bitterness happens in beer, but we'll just say, you know, some hops have a little alpha acid and some hops have a lot. Now, a lot of your noble hops, you know, from Bavaria or your Belgian hops or your English hops will be low alpha acid, 3%, 5%. That would be a low number. Now, the macro breweries, you know, the big guys here, were using these hops to make these 500-barrel batches, these huge batches. So they're using a lot of hops because they need a lot of hops.
So that lower alpha or the lower number is more subtle?
Yeah, well, it means it has a lot less ability to make something bitter. It will make the beer bitter, but you need to use more to get to that IBU, to get to that desired bitterness.
So they have to be like making hybrids and developing hops
exactly
that don't occur in nature.
Totally. The big boys
that's
were
what
like,
they do.
Yeah.
Like, hey, let's breed this one and that one. And they were getting these like 13, 15, 17% alpha acid hops and using a very little bit to make a big batch, which is really, I mean, that's good for efficiency. It drives their margin right up. Well, the little guys on the microbreweries were like taking these hops and like smelling them and tasting them, and like, this smells like, you know, pineapple or passion fruit or grapefruit or
and
pine or
spruce
resin
and
spruce,
like, lavender.
Spruce. Yeah,
you can
absolutely.
New flavors, and they like set off this just amazing, amazing trend of pounding out IPAs.
So you brought in for us, we're going to take a little break here, but you brought in the Kelso IPA. We come back, we're going to talk about that beer, and we'll talk more with the We Dig Plants on Beer Sessions Radio.
Let's go.
Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. Beer Sessions Radio is sponsored by GreatBrewers.com. GreatBrewers.com is one of our favorite resources for all things craft beer. Test your beer knowledge, find great beer in your neighborhood, and check out the events calendar, all on GreatBrewers.com. We're also supported by the people at the Good Beer Seal, an association of 27 New York City bars that serve, promote, and support good beer. Check out GoodBeerSeal.com. Questions? If you're listening to us live at 5 o'clock on Tuesday, August 3rd, call the studio at 718-497-2128 or email us at beersessions@gmail.com. We're here with Carmen DeVito and Alice Marcus Craig from We Dig Plants, Ben Granger of Beercraft, myself, Jimmy Carboni, and Ray Dieter. We've been talking about hops. Let's go back to the plant experts. And let's why don't you tell us some fun facts about hops, and you can maybe quiz Ben.
Okay.
Because he's really he's our real hop expert. You're a plant expert. So give us a couple of fun facts, and let's get into some quiz questions.
Carmen, you start.
Okay. Let's see. What can you tell me about the Japanese varieties, Ben?
Okay. That's the quiz. That's, all right.
So Humulus japonicus, right? The Japanese variety. Most commonly used
of
as
course.
An ornamental hop.
That.
It's got a very low alpha. I don't even know if it has alphas in it, to be honest with you. It can't be really used for bittering. I've never actually smelt one, so I can't really tell you the aroma, but I do know that they're specifically used for an ornamental use, and they may be a little bit more resilient considering they have a lot less going on.
Hey, Ben.
Yeah.
I know that sake is also brewed. Sake is more akin to a wine. Rice beer.
Mm-hmm.
Do they use hops in making sake?
I don't believe so. Do they distill sake?
No, they don't. They brew it.
They don't. They brew
it's
it straight.
Brewed rice.
And it's never.
Yeah, it's polished rice.
Yeah.
But I wonder if they're using some kind of strain of hops that aren't, you know, very aromatic.
It's
a stabilizer.
It's possible, but the thing is with sake that it ferments out so dry. There's not a lot of there's not a lot of complex sugars left behind. There's
right.
not a lot of sweetness left behind. So
Ben's
you
pouring
need,
the beers
you would
too.
Need like doing double duty.
Let's take a step back for 1 minute. We're getting a little too scientific for me. Give us a couple more hops facts and last couple more questions.
Here's some fun uses for hops other than beer. How about that?
Other than beer?
Other than beer.
What show is this?
Like I said, we're nerds. they were used in traditional kitchen gardens for the American colonists. The shoots can be found in salads. They're blanched, and it was actually a great kind of zippy additive to a salad. The wax can be extruded from the tendrils and used for a vegetable dye, a kind of reddish color. I thought that was pretty interesting for all of you artists out there. The fibers of the plant can be substitute for flax, so it was used in weaving. And the stalks can be used to make baskets.
Can you smoke it?
I'm sure people have tried, right?
Well, didn't the Native Americans use it for its sleep-inducing properties?
Yeah, and tranquilizers and mm-hmm. tooth
And how did they consume it for sleep-inducing?
That I'm not sure of.
Because one time I was in a hop field and I actually tried
shoot
to
it?
Taste some of the fresh, and it kind of like doesn't go
very
away.
Bitter.
It
yeah.
almost chokes
it's
you.
It's very bitter for a long. It's yeah. very bitter for a long time. If you just eat a cone, it's
that you, oil doesn't go away.
No,
yeah, it needs
no,
the sugars.
Yeah,
yeah.
So hops are cool, and it brings us back to one of my favorite points: is that beer really is an agricultural product.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't talk about that enough, but I still think that. Why can't New York be a great hop producer again? Why can't all our local breweries have local hops? You know, Ben.
Well, I mean,
is there hope?
There's definitely hope. There's definitely hope. I mean, as the demand for hops increases, especially in the Northeast, working in beer, we all know that in the Northwest, beer has been alive and thriving for years and years and years and years. In the Northeast. It's also been alive and thriving, but not with the same passion. And in the last 10 years, that passion has been cranked up. I mean, we've like really turned it up quite a bit. So as the demand increases, I mean, so will the supply, I believe. And I think as more awareness comes to the people who are able to grow hops and are willing to,
yeah.
I think we'll find more hop farmers for sure.
By the mid-1800s, the U.S. was producing 1.5 million pounds of hops. and New York State alone was producing 1 million.
Yeah, we used to be the largest exporter of hops in the entire world.
Exactly.
Yeah, which is outstanding. New York State, which is
so what changed
genius.
That?
The blight. It was a blight. In the Cooperstown, in the local history, they say there was a blight around 1900. And now I think the only patch of hops is at the Farmers Museum in Cooperstown.
That's the story that's been thrown around.
I started that story.
You started that story? I've been regurgitating that story because of you.
So the blight.
Another fun fact also about hops is...
Yes, fun facts. We love them.
Is that the farming of it actually... produced the first kind of architectural barn design, in that these barns, and you can see them up in Cooperstown, they have a square and then a long rectangle, and the square is two stories, and the kiln is on the first floor, and then it's dried, and the steam from the heating below would rise up onto this like open weave of wood, and that's how they would dry it.
Okay.
And that they needed that taller structure on the square to make that process work more efficiently. And then the longer, more rectangular piece was more for the laying out and the drying after.
Wow. That's awesome.
After the
design. If you guys remember talking about hops last year in the Times, what I've been really impressed by is how Eric Asimov at the Times writes more and more interesting articles about beer, and when he used to only write wine stories. And we love that. Thank you, Eric. But there was a great article about fresh hop beers. And what most remarked for me was that we got a call from the Times at Jimmy's number 43 is, do you have any fresh hop beers? Do you have any on this week?
Because
we're running an article Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, I know there's Sierra Nevada Harvest.
Right.
And
we had gone through 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, there was a Southern Tier one and, you know, maybe something Two Brothers. But we didn't really pay attention to the fact that there were fresh hop beers. And looking into it further, it was like, wow, the ones from Sierra Nevada, they do grow right outside their brewery. But then the other part of the year, they get them from the Southern Hemisphere. And we tried to find if there were any breweries using fresh hops from, you know, anywhere in New York or Pennsylvania. And there was hardly any.
I'm sorry.
No, you remember that article. But it was just cool because it made an awareness of fresh hops. And and we're talking about being an agricultural product. And guess what? Most of the hops are dried.
Yep.
And they're FedEx from somewhere else. And they're like little pellets. They look like dog food. I mean, it's kind of like you think it's this beautiful process. And you go into a brewery, and even the best breweries, it's like they're putting this like dried pieces of hop in.
A couple of years ago, Rogue used to have a product. I think they still do. It was called Rogue Red Dry Hopped. And... I love the beer. It's one of my favorite Rogue products. It's not out all the time, but excuse me. But one of the they would put a bag of hops in the keg, and it was like in like what do you call it? A
muslin,
right?
Cheesecloth.
Right.
Cheesecloth. It was in cheesecloth, and every once in a while,
herb almost.
Right, an herb bag, and it would be actually floating in the barrel of beer. Except it was great. Except when that bag. Ripped open.
Bust, right.
And then my beer lines were basically ruined. Mm-hmm. Well, that one line was ruined where it was on because it would just clog the line and then we had a
big You phone and every call. Farmer's wife.
But until that bag broke, it was one of the best beers I had at that point.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, this is going back about, you know, 12, 15 years ago. I've not seen it around. I think they got sued probably by a lot of people. That's not true. I doubt they got
sued. Have you had experience with fresh hop beers?
Oh, yeah. I brewed fresh hop beers. I did a beer... last harvest that was 11.5% alcohol, brewed with local honey, brewed with dried hops and my dried hops from my garden and fresh wet hops from my garden.
Would this be
the
beer that was mentioned in the Edible Brooklyn article?
Yeah, that's the same beer. But we do it every year. My personal favorites are wet hop beers. Yes, they taste a little plant like, but you are getting like there's a lot less handling in the cones. So
what's wet hop versus dry hop?
Fresh, wet, off the vine.
That means
hops.
Wet hop.
That means wet hop.
Wet.
Just it hasn't been cured at all.
So they don't dry it in the barn or do anything
No. Yeah, I'll take them. I take them right off the vine, and
15 minutes later.
Yeah, they're in beer.
How do you get them off the vine without leaves and stuff? You just like by fingers, just pull them off. Is there a tool?
It involves a lot of beer, is what it really is.
It's pretty time. It's a pretty delicate process. That's probably. part of the reason why it's hard to get somebody growing it, because it's probably a time sensitive, and it's very time sensitive, and it's time consuming harvest. You can't just use a combine, you know what I mean?
There's a company that makes tools to do it, but they make like five of these machines a year, and there's like five hop growers that use these machines, you know. So it's really time consuming, and the home grower is just going to cut them down at the end of the season and pick the you know, the buds off, the flowers off one by one.
Will they grow back after you cut them down, or you replant?
They're weeds basically. Yeah. That as we go forward the next couple of years, like, you know, ask of your local brewer, that tell them that you want fresh hop beers, which means that, you know, it could encourage the you know, local hop movements and all around the country. You know, you need kind of a locally grown hop to really get the most of it, to have a fresh hop beer, which once you've had it, you're like, you're hooked. Like, I'm hooked. It's from Sierra Nevada, and it's like my favorite beer, the Sierra Nevada Harvest.
Well, that's like every other local movement. You know, tomatoes taste best when they're grown as close as possible to your plate, and every other thing. So it kind of makes sense,
right,
you know?
Absolutely.
I loved reading about the kind of labor camps that were in the 20s and 30s, the seasonal labor that would go to these, you know, these fields and have to harvest, and it would be a huge party because basically you've got 2 or 3 weeks, and they would set up these
and
entire
they get free beer.
Cities. Yeah, they would set up these cities, and they would import people from the east to go west, work for a couple of weeks, and the wages were amazing. And you'd like hang out in these tent cities and talk about camping,
kind of like Cooperstown.
Yeah.
So Ray, you know, when you're up there in Cooperstown, I know you had some unbelievable experiences. In fact, Ray's phone was turned off for like 12 hours Saturday night. You don't have to share with us what you did, but we do know that the Belgium Comes to Cooperstown is an amazing fest. I think next year it's going to be Beer Sessions Radio Goes to Cooperstown.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
These are the things that we do. Like, we got to bring Weed Dig Plants on. We got Ben here from Beercraft. Ben, right now at Beercraft, what's your favorite beer? If I walk into Beercraft and I want a really interesting beer, what should I get?
Whew, really interesting right this second. All right, right this second, I have on tap, a beer that we drank here today is the Kelso IPA. It's just, it's only happened, this is the second time it's ever happened. It is an IPA, you know, so it's going to be big and hoppy, but it's done with the Nelson Savant hops, which are a really rare variety of hop and really hard to get your hands on.
Kelly's a great brewer.
Oh, he is really good, and he's one of our locals. And I tell you, it's because of its rarity and how exquisite this beer is, it's awesome. It's like fruit punch with a little bit of green grape to it. Super dry. I mean, it's an homage to that specific hop.
Hey Ben, I got a question for you. I mean, I was up at Cooperstown last week, and I had a beer, and I'm going to try and get it into DBA, and it was made by the guys that make Dale's Pale Ale out in Colorado.
Yeah, Oscar Blues.
Oscar Blues, correct. And I forget the name. I think it started with a G.
Gubna.
And it tasted like green onion.
Whoa,
nice.
But it tasted like green onion.
Wow.
It was amazing. And it was obviously an effect of the hops. It had nothing to do with
it. Did it come out of a can?
No, it was on draft. Actually Dan from the Pony Bar was pouring it on draft.
Did it was the name of the beer called Gubna?
Yeah, that was the one.
Yeah, we have cans of that. We had a draft when it first landed. That beer will get you there in a hurry.
I know it's like 11% or something.
Yeah, it sneaks up on you. And you're right. The hop is very vegetal.
Yeah,
it's really vegetal.
We're going to take a little break, but what's the second beer that you poured for us?
The second beer is another rarity. This is Bell's Point Sculpin. This beer has got a cocktail of about 8 different hops in it, all of which
Ballast Point Sculpin.
Yeah.
We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network.
In the basement.
Welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're sponsored by GreatBrewers.com, one of our favorite sites for beer information. What's great about the site is that it isn't just for us New York locals. Great Brewers has many outposts throughout the country. You can check out their events calendar or join a beer group for your area anytime on GreatBrewers.com.
You know, Jimmy, I just want to interrupt there. I just want to say that that website is amazing, the Great Brewers website.
Why? What do you like about it?
It's just so interactive, and it's you can learn a lot about good beer, and I go on it probably every day.
Have you ever taken the Great Brewers 100 test?
Sure.
And what score did you get?
About 37.
Ben, have you taken it?
I have not taken it.
I took it. The first time I took it last year, I got a 72. And that was with some study aids. So I think I've got to learn a bit.
Take home test?
Well, you know, when you do a test at home and you can have different screens on your computer, you know, you can
it's a whole new meaning to an open book test, right?
Exactly.
But one of our favorite things on Beer Sessions Radio is when our listeners call or write in. And we've got a great email question here from Brian P. in Bear Creek Village, Pennsylvania. And someone once asked me, are these real questions or is the producer writing them? I think they're real questions, because I know that there's a Brian
Jimmy Hathaway asked that question
in Bear Creek Village, Pennsylvania, and this question is actually about our show tonight, and it's a straightforward question, and I'm gonna let Ray answer the question first. Can beer be made without hops, Ray?
Good beer.
Well, can beer be made without hops?
Of course it can. Yes. It can be, but is it good? I mean, the beer that we're familiar with now these days, you know, needs hops to make that flavor profile. But yeah, you can you get your grains, you ferment it, it gets fizzy, alcohol's created, you got beer.
I've been reading the next week we have Garrett Oliver on, which I'm really proud of because we've got the show now for 5 months. And Garrett, we waited until we had the show, had a little bit of legs, but Garrett's been excited to come on. He's coming on next week. And I told him I found this book, his first book called The Good Beer Book, that he wrote with Timothy Harper. He's like, God, I haven't seen that book in 10 years. And actually, it was in one of my food and cooking cookbook boxes that I have. I have hundreds of cookbooks. And I finally pulled it out, and I'm like, it's a really good book. And it talks about hops. And he said that until 800 years ago, nobody used hops in beer.
Right.
That's right. The Romans brought hops to Britain for use as a vegetable, if I can be a nerd for a minute. And the Babylonians were the first to make the strong beverage, quote unquote. It was the Babylonians' immigration into Central Europe that brought the hops knowledge to Europe. So hops has been in commercial production since about the 11th century in Bavaria. But growing or importing hops into England was illegal until the 16th century.
Illegal to use hops in beer?
Yeah.
They made it with malt.
Right.
And like
I'm sure that was a farming protection thing.
It was malt and wormwood, and it was considered, hops were technically considered wicked. It was like the wicked.
Right, because they weren't grown in England at the time.
Exactly.
And wormwood was in absinthe, you know?
Right.
Sure, of course.
And that's why the Massachusetts Bay Colony of 1629, they were really the first, that was the first introduction. It was England's idea of, hey, we see a market here and we see land. So what are we going to do? Let's make some money, because the people were demanding this because they had access to it from fighting all of Britain's wars.
So what did people make beer with before they used hops?
Any herb that would bitter the beer. Anything that would cover the sweetness of the malts. Wormswood is classic. I have wormswood in my garden that we're using to make.
I've read about that in Edible Brooklyn.
Yeah, that we're using to make this year's harvest ale.
I'd love to taste that.
But anything. I mean, even spiced beers. Curacao orange peel. You know, coriander. Anything that's going to provide a bitterness to mask any residual sweetness from the grains, you know, and classically they're called gruits, you know,
right.
Beers brewed with heather, beers brewed with, I mean,
lavender.
Yeah, you name it.
What's interesting is in Belgium, they were brewing the lambic beers and they had to sweeten them. So they were trying to get the beer to be sweeter to cover up that sourness from the lambic.
What about lambics and sours? Do they still have hops too?
Yeah. But they with lambics, they'll age the hops. So there's none of those oils. You're really only getting alphas just to keep it balanced.
Right.
And they'll even age the hops to the point where they have kind of a funky aroma, per se. But they still use hops. But the thing is most 95% of European brewers are going to use considerably less hops in their beer than an American brewer. anyways, at this stage in the game.
Well, just that's changing
palate,
a little bit.
As you were, yeah, as you were saying, it's changing a little bit with, you know, McKellar and right. A handful of these breweries that are brewing more of an American
Terrier.
Style of,
Have you had McKellar, which is a great brewery in Denmark, Ben, right? They've done a series of single hop beers, which has been really cool. I have the Nelson Sauv that they made.
Delicious.
It's on right now, Jimmy's 43. We've got the Nelson Sauv single hop IPA tonight.
Also, Sly Fox does their single hop. What do they call it?
The IPA project.
Right, the IPA project. It's really interesting.
That was pretty awesome.
The varietal hop. Every month they would come out with a different varietal hop. Are they doing it this year?
You know what? I'm not sure, because 2 years ago was the IPA project that culminated with the double IPA at the end of
the
project.
Right, with all
the
hops.
Yeah, with all the hops. and then they switched it to a pale ale project, but I haven't heard much about it this year.
I got
to
call Brian about that.
They did a nugget.
Sly Fox Brewing.
They did a nugget version that was just...
So Beercraft, you really, because you serve draft, but you're more of a retail shop, you really get to taste probably more beers than anyone else, I think.
I spend a lot of the time during the day drinking beer. I am not ashamed to admit.
And that's
this.
Why your eyes are so open. Ben, you're passionate about beer.
I do like beer.
And Carmen and Alice are passionate about plants. I love these that you guys came in with like 3 pages of notes about hops, and I'm totally cutting you off, and I feel bad. But tell us some more fun facts. I like the fun facts. This is only our first hop show, because since hop is such an important part of beer, we're going to do this like every month.
Well, some fun facts. Hops, as Ben was saying, is subject to the mildews and variety of pests and diseases, and there's huge swings between sort of a good and bad harvest, which can affect the price and everything. Sometimes the taste, prices falling or soaring. So this uncertainty created much of the speculation and booming, in the industry. So it really became, as Jimmy was saying, you have to think of it as an agricultural product, because you're dealing with a plant. And when you're dealing with plants, there's always uncertainties. And there's always constant, I'm sure, like in other kinds of agricultural crops, the research stations at the universities like Cornell and other places, constantly trying to develop new varieties to be resistant to different pests and diseases.
Well, what I love is also that this country was founded from the Massachusetts Bay Company, they saw this as an opportunity to make money.
To grow hops.
This was a commodity in our formation.
So at the time when they were forming that company, they were still outlawed back in the old country in England?
Well, no.
Or is that loosening up?
It was loose at the time, but I think they saw this land and this opportunity to make a lot of money for themselves.
Well, I always think it's interesting. Mayflower actually parked at Plymouth Rock because they ran out of beer on the boat, which is a true story.
That was probably a factor, but you also have to think about, I guess, from an agricultural perspective, the land in England and in the other European countries had been cultivated for centuries. And they had no commercial fertilizers at that point, so their land was getting worn out. So to come to a virgin place, to come to see virgin land that hadn't really been cultivated, they must have been able to produce amazing levels of crops that they couldn't do there. And also, the land was controlled still under a semi-feudal system then. So to be encouraged to come here and get land basically for free.
Well, the Indians didn't think it was free.
Well, that's true.
You're working for the king, and you're exporting everything you
guys. It's a beer show.
Oh, it's politics.
All right. So all the good beers. And what's the next beer that you poured for us, Ben?
The next beer is called Schoenrahmer Bock, but it's their Saphir Bock. This is a little bit more delicate of a hop profile.
Saphir hop.
Yeah, and it's done with the Saphir hop, which is another new hop to the game.
Where is this beer from?
This is a German beer.
Yeah, have you had the Mars, which is another great brewery? They have a Mars Saphir Weiss.
Mars Saphir. And the Brooklyner Schneider was done with Saphirs as well.
It's like a more subtle hop.
Yeah, a little bit more subtle of a hop, but I think the beer is outstanding. And I think the brewery is amazing as well. I just want to give them play for who they are. They're really just outstanding.
It's like this very subtle hop with that sweetness of the Bock.
Yeah.
Who's importing this beer?
Omni. They're distributing it to the importer, I can't remember the name, but the distributor is Omni Wines.
Omni Wines is distributing beer. Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
They have, check out all the Schoenrahmer stuff. They don't do much beer, but they've got, because we're draft and bottles and we have all
the
stuff.
Are they also doing
the
Hopf?
Yes, the Hopf.
Okay.
Yeah. Same people. Okay. And we just got this in 3 days ago, so
we're always looking for new importers.
Yeah, they're really good stuff. Really, really good stuff.
Yeah, they have some pretty obscure German breweries.
Yeah, they do.
That hop stuff is pretty good. It's spelled H-O-P-F,
yeah,
right?
Hopf. Yep.
And they're doing all, it's all Weiss beers. It's a traditional Weiss beer brewery. Yep. And their stuff's really, really good.
Is that the brewery that's a nunnery?
I believe it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
The nuns.
Yeah, the nuns make the beer.
The nuns? That's awesome.
That's rad. It's totally awesome.
They got to do something with their time.
Yeah, so, for sure.
Since we're talking about nuns, how did brew making? Because you know the ladies got so excited when they heard nuns. How did brew making beer
weird,
making
actually.
Get taken from women and turned? Into wasn't the story about that witches, people were called witches because they knew how to brew beer, and they tried to stop letting women control in the homes controlling the breweries, and they wanted to make them commercial. Is there some story there, or am I just reading Garrett Oliver's book?
Well, traditionally speaking, the women in the house definitely made the beer. I mean, in some places it's still true. If there's in the Andes with spit beers and things like that, it's still very, very common. But I have no idea why it went away.
And brewing is alchemy,
because,
right?
I think because people saw it as a commodity.
Oh, right.
And it became
business. It went
political.
From, yeah, it went from household to business. Yeah.
But in the lore, the idea of witches and witch hunts, there was some connection between brewing, which meant the cauldron, which was actually probably brewing beer, and it was something about getting women to stop making beer and people making money off of it.
And put aside their wicked ways.
Yeah.
Is that why they burned him up there in Boston?
I don't know about that, but I think that was a love affair. But I would think that...
Love,
that,
politics, and beer. Those are three good subjects.
Yeah. Well, talking about... Now,
Salem. I was in Boston. It was Salem.
This is about the politics of who controls beer. There was talk that... it could have easily been, instead of the Boston Tea Party to start the revolution, it could have been the Boston Hot Party or Beer Party.
Right.
There is, one thing I like to see, the rise of homebrew movement equals some egalitarianism and the fact that people are able to make something very basic. Like, you can't really make and sell cigarettes, but, homebrew is growing. There's more and more people doing it every year.
Well,
and it's being encouraged. Like, there's no law saying, well, if you're making more than, 5 gallons of homebrew, you have to give some to the king or something.
Right.
And but, not too long ago, you couldn't really homebrew.
Well, historically, I think beer was the water, basically, because you couldn't count on a good, clean water source.
Absolutely.
So it was, it was a necessity. So.
And there is still a magic number of how many gallons you're allowed to brew as a home brewer before you pay taxes.
Really? What is that?
I have no idea what the number is, but how many homebrewers do you know that are declaring anything about their beer?
I believe all the homebrewers I know are declaring something.
I am.
Because
they're
all totally within the law.
But it's ultimately a people versus government issue. And in homebrewing, it's almost like if you want to express yourself as being a democratic citizen and your right to freedom, you should almost homebrew. I heard that this is in Garrett Oliver's book, which I read this morning, but he said the after the revolution, when we won, or on Independence Day, all the brewers walked down with signs like, homebrew or die, or something like that. And I think that we lost all these great stories of the fact that New York was a great hop production area and these little histories of beer and hop growing and all that. I think that was all lost in Prohibition. I think that Prohibition came and really knocked out the fabric of our life, which really did revolve around beer and homebrewing and hop growing. And I think that's one of our jobs this year is to bring that back to people and think about the history of hops and hop growing, because hops don't have to be like dried pellets that come in the mail.
No,
I mean, we could be growing them and we could be making more beer. Ray, you want to give a few closing words, because we're gonna say goodnight.
Well, I want to invite everybody over to DBA this evening. We're having a Saison beer and soft cheese tasting with Martin Johnson from the Bedford Cheese Shop and the Joy of Cheese. And we're also having a tequila tasting as well for those folks.
That's great. And at Jimmy's number 43 tonight, we have an East Coast IPA tasting, when next week on the same night, we'll have a West Coast IPA tasting.
Ooh,
so I like to say July Good Beer Month may be over, but events at Good Beer Seal Bars just keep going. On Sunday, Blind Tiger Ale House will be having an all-day fundraiser to benefit fishermen and oyster farmers hit so hard by the tragic oil spill in the Gulf. Enjoy authentic Cajun food and great beer to benefit the Greater New Orleans Foundation. Check out goodbrasil.com for more information, and that is tragic. And in closing, I'd like to thank our sponsors at greatbrewers.com who have helped to bring this podcast to you tonight. Beer Sessions Radio is supported by the Good Beer Seal. Thanks to my co-host Ray Dieter, I'm Jimmy Carboni. Thanks to our producers Jack Inslee, Brie O'Connor, and engineer. Special guest, not Nat Wiener tonight. Thanks to Carmen, Alice, and Ben for joining us tonight, and we'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio.
Thank you.
Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. Sometimes it makes me feel mellow.